Welcome back to Chaos Cast, the Chaos Community Podcast, where we share use cases and experiences with measuring open source community health. On the panel today are Sean Goggins, Isaac Malarski, Remy DeCosmaker, Natalia Lazariaga, and Ayat Ali. And I am Dawn Foster, your host for today, along with co-host Sean Goggins. So let's start and just give everybody a chance to introduce themselves. I will start. So I am Dawn Foster. I am Director of Data Science for the Chaos Project. I'm also on the board of Open UK, and I'm co-chair for the CNCF Contributor Strategy Technical Advisory Group. So let me kick it over to Sean to introduce himself.
I'm Sean Goggins, one of the co-founders of Chaos, an Augur maintainer, computer science professor at Missouri in the US of A. And that's it for now. I'll kick it over to Remy.
Hi there, everybody. My name is Remy DeCosmaker, and I'm the open source program office lead here at the Digital Services at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And I help contributors work together to use their powers for good. And I will pass it over to Natalia.
Hi, everyone. My name is Natalia Lizayaga, and I am a US Digital Core Fellow under the software engineering track. And I am part of the Digital Service at CMS Open Source Program Office. And I'll pass it on to Isaac.
Hi, everyone. My name is Isaac Malarski. I am also a US Digital Core Fellow under the software engineering track. And I work under the CMS Open Source Program Office. And I've been Augur and Chaos contributor and maintainer for, I think, 2 or 3 years now. So happy to be here. And I'll pass it on to Ayat.
Awesome. Hello, everybody. My name is Ayat Ali. I'm a UX designer here at the Digital Service at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. Previously was a social worker and then moved into UX design, and happy to be supporting the OSPO team at CMS.
All right. Well, thanks and welcome, everyone. So let's start the podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the work that your team is doing within the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services?
I'll start, but I'll let the other folks chime in on their specific work that they're contributing to. So we are running and launching the first open source program office at a federal agency in the United States. We, of course, are not the first people to be doing open source at the federal government. There's a long history, about 20 plus years of open source development. It really began in 1999 or so. It was the first memorandum that were published by the Department of Defense. We stand on the shoulders of giants, as they say around here. So folks like 18F, US Digital Service, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, there is a rich history of open source development that is happening across the federal government. And we're really lucky to be a part of that, continuing that tradition. Here at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, specifically, our team is here to help improve the experience of healthcare and deliver value for patients, providers, and citizens in the systems. We serve over 150 million people in the United States through Medicare, Medicaid, healthcare.gov, and the Children's Health Insurance Program. So that's what our agency does. Within the agency, we are part of the Digital Service. So the Digital Service is a group of multidisciplinary product engineering, design, and policy specialists that detail into various projects across the agency to help modernize government and deliver value for our stakeholders. I've been in the Digital Service coming up almost on 2 years now. So I'm relatively new to public service, but the agency has been doing this kind of work before I got here. Our director is Andrea Flesher. She's the Chief Digital Transformation Officer. That's her title. And REA Jacobson is our deputy director. The both of them have been a part of Federal Service and the United States Digital Service in the past. So we're growing our own digital service team within CMS at the agency specific level. And as far as open source is concerned, open source is something that CMS has been doing since the mid-2010s. Healthcare.gov depended heavily upon a variety of open source libraries. Originally, some of the first open source libraries that CMS delivered came out of that era. And ever since then, we've been maintaining github.com/cmsgov. It's a place where you can find a lot of our repos, but other agencies and optives or operational divisions have their code available on the internet as well. So the work that we're doing and growing in OSPO is supporting not just open source libraries, but also open source communities, open source initiatives, open standards, open data, anywhere where we can help to share information across the agency to help deliver value to the citizens and stakeholders on the internet. And specifically, we have a couple different projects and initiatives, and I will pass it over to my teammates to describe some of those, starting maybe with Natalia.
Okay, sounds good. So one of the initiatives that our open source program office has been working on is that we've been building a maturity model framework to assess where a project is at in their open source journey and kind of put a number on the level of maturity that that project is at. So in our framework that we've been developing, we have defined 5 tiers of maturity. The first one being tier 0, which is a private repository. Tier 1, which is a one-time release repository. Tier 2, a close collaboration repository, similar to kind of an inner source style repository where we have smaller, mostly internal teams that are working on the project. Then we have tier 3, which is a working in public repository or a public repository where people can collaborate in smaller, semi-open teams. And finally, we have our tier 4 most mature tier, which is an open source community where everyone can collaborate broadly in public. So now that we have this framework, we've started to assess all software projects across the organization and use our maturity model framework to determine which maturity level these projects are at. And to support this initiative, we created a repo scaffolder tool in collaboration with the US Digital Response. It kind of complements our maturity model framework by allowing our new and existing projects to comply with our maturity model framework. So the way we do this is first we ask a series of questions where users can determine which level of maturity their project is at. So these questions include, does your project have more than one contributor? Do you plan on cutting more than one release for the project? Do you plan on having other individuals and teams outside of the agency work with you? Do you plan on having other individuals and teams outside the agency maintain the project with you? Did you plan to have other individuals and teams outside of the agency plan the development roadmap with you? And based on how the user answers these series of questions, we suggest to them the maturity level of that project. Now that the project does have a maturity level, we use the tool to generate a set of our documentation templates that will automatically be added to their project so it complies with our baseline maturity model framework. So these documentation templates that we add include mandatory files that every single open source project should have, such as a license.md, a readme.md, a contributing.md. And for projects that are further into their open source journey, such as having a community surrounded behind it, we would then have other files such as a governance.md, a maintainers.md, and many more markdown files. So that's for the maturity model framework. One of our other initiatives we've been working on is to support other teams with outbounding their repositories. So as a result, we've been creating a checklist that allows our team to go through the project and review certain aspects of it so that it is ready to be open sourced. So in this checklist, we have sections where we assess the benefits of open sourcing the project, the risks of open sourcing the project, such as if there's any vulnerabilities that may be exposed, if the project uses personal identifiable information or personal health information. After that, we go through an extensive code review where we analyze the code, make sure it's using best practices. And we also offer a toolkit that we use alongside the code analysis, such as RepoLinter, GitLeaks, which allows us to protect the project and search for any secrets within the project so that we can automatically remove that. And we also use Git Filter Repo, which allows us to remove unwanted files with any sensitive data in the repository's history. And these are also all open source tools that we use as part of our code analysis. Finally, we review the licensing of the project, and we also review the documentation, whether they include certain files. So after we go through our outbound checklist, we can then flip the switch and make the repo public. And with making the repo public, we also want to add certain features to the repository to ensure that development as a result of being open source is going smoothly. So some of these features include dependabot alerts, secret scanning alerts, branch protections, and DCO signing, developer certificate origin signing.
Awesome. Thank you, Natalia. As for how we're using Augur metrics and other modes of categorization with our maturity models, in addition to maturity models, we're also doing something called a Nadia labeling, which is essentially like creating a taxonomy of basically...
So when you say Nadia labeling, you're referring to a person's...
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Nadia Eggball, right?
I'm pretty sure, yes. Nadia Eggball, she wrote Working in Public, and we're inspired by her work to create similar project labeling within Augur in Upstream, and it's currently not in production or anything, but we have an existing metric stack and website that we have that's planning on using that as one of our value adds in terms of categorization. And branching off of that, our metrics website is basically a GitHub Pages website that updates weekly through an action. It's a very low cost solution that is just loaded up with all the repos and groups that you want, and we've structured it so that it generates reports and graphs and relevant information that people want to know, such as maturity models and the Nadia labeling and just sort of a bunch of stuff at a glance. So just sort of providing carrots for people in order to adopt the things that we want them to adopt. And just like, oh, you get this cool metrics dashboard. Like, please abide by our outbound maturity model checklist. And in the same vein, we're also working on a tool called Duplifier, which is another exciting open source tool that we're working on as part of the open source program office here at CMS, which is a data linkage and deduplication tool for reported ACO healthcare data and patient data. And it uses an existing open source library called Splink, which was used in the UK, I know, for the census, and I think for other purposes in the NHS, but I know that it was used for census data, and I can link to a relevant paper about how it was used. But yeah, we're using it for this deduplifier tool that I'm working on with Natalia, and we're basically just trying to do some healthy open source practices here in the government by outbounding it and going through an alpha test. Yes, we released it earlier this month, as Jeremy says, and we're going through an alpha process with our stakeholders and generally people that don't come from the same technical programming background and working with them to really get a tool that people are excited about into the hands of stakeholders and get more value for the OSPO and working on some exciting tools.
Sounds like it deduplifies stakeholders in your underlying agencies. Have you tried to apply it to software developer deduplication inside of GitHub?
Theoretically, you could. We haven't gone to that purpose yet. But yeah, it's really exciting because they already have tools that could duplicate data, but this is a more accurate tool and you could control it more because it's an algorithm.
And it sounds like you're using the open source program office tools that your team is also creating to manage that project.
Yes, exactly. We actually have that project tracked on the metrics website, and we can link to that if you want to. Yeah, you can see the commits week after week, various states of pull requests, like closed, merge, that kind of thing. And for our upcoming V1 launch, we're actually using key Augur metrics in that and showing the value of those. And once we have those initial Augur metrics in there, we'll have some real exciting stuff in the form of like OSS scorecard, live year report, so that we can like across the government have metrics of security nature and important stuff like that, keep track of vulnerabilities. But yeah, as far as the current state of the metric stack, we have a currently launched product that we're adding the features to and really showing the value of OSPO metrics to the broader CMS open source community that we're trying to grow. And in addition to that, we have a deduplifier tool that's really showing value in that arena.
That's awesome. The work that you're doing is pretty exciting and curious. When you take all the things that your team is putting together, it sounds like it serves not only HHS, Medicare, Medicaid, but also has utility beyond that frame of you, perhaps. And I know from the discussions we've had, you are doing a lot of work with UI design, and I'm just curious how to actualize what people want to see about their metrics. What informs that process? What is your process? And this is kind of to everybody. Like, I don't necessarily, whoever.
Natalia has more experience in front-end UI web design than I do. But as far as from a metrics visualization perspective, which I do have some experience in Augur, it's really the nature of the metric. We have, for example, we have one in our V1 that's basically like the line breakdown of the project, like comments, empty lines, and then the total lines. And that could just be like a simple donut graph or something like at a glance. That is mostly for like, okay, let's look at our government projects and are they not commented at all? That is noteworthy. Like, let's make sure that we can tell that at a glance. But for other more detailed visualizations, then more detailed graphs are necessary.
So in terms of our approach with end user design, for the metrics website, our stakeholders for this website are not just software developers or technical individuals, but also non-technical folks, such as product and project managers, designers, team leads. So we wanted to make sure that we present our metrics and visualizations in a clear and understandable way. And we realized that some of our metrics are kind of new terms that these non-technical folks wouldn't know, such as lib years or pull requests. So alongside in our metrics website, we're going to have a glossary that kind of goes over these software terms so our stakeholders can understand the metrics and activity going on within their projects and organizations, and from there understand the value and how they can best support those projects. And alongside with that, our metrics website is also for leadership at CMS so that they can kind of get a high-level overview of the progress and the health of their teams and department software projects. And the second thing is, for the front end of the metrics website, we chose to use the US Web Design System, which allows federal teams to build accessible mobile-friendly government websites. So this open source library provides a bunch of front end components that we can use that allows our website to have baseline 508 web accessibility compliance and allows this website to be mobile friendly as well.
Yeah, and I can jump in here a bit. Admittedly, I've sort of been helping the team just for a short amount of time relatively in the grand scheme of things. So Remy and I have really been thinking through open source software strategy, trying to get as much information out to our advisory board, thinking through our source code stewardship task force that we're kicking up, really doing a lot of the behind the scenes kind of strategy thinking. And then another big component of the work that I'm working on with Natalia that we have a meeting on a little later today, actually, is around creating our own OSPO guide and benchmarking what other entities have put together for their OSPO guides and creating our CMS OSPO guide. And in addition to obviously reaching out to a lot of these stakeholders within CMS and doing a lot of advocacy work and showing the value of open source and communicating how incredibly important it is for the entire US. And just one other thing to answer your question, Sean, around how are we thinking about what metrics need to be added from like a user-centric perspective? You know, internally, we've talked about wanting to do some workshops with a few stakeholders and thinking through what metrics they would like to see, starting out with just point A, which is, hey, here's what we have. Poke at it. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you do like. And really trying to do a series of those workshops and then think through some usability testing.
A major resource for us is not just internally where we speak with our chief information security officer and our chief information officer, talking with them about what are the metrics that they have that are important for their programs, whether it's from a cybersecurity standpoint or from an employee readiness standpoint. Those are important things from the inside of the government. And we're really lucky that on the outside of the government, there is a OSPO metrics working group that is actually convened by Chaos. And we are weekly attendees there so that we can start to demo some of our early work with other folks from OSPOs and open source programs across the prep sector and in academia. And by talking with them and sharing our work together, we can sort of come to informed conclusions that include some outside perspectives, because there are some differences between working in a private sector OSPO and working in a public sector OSPO. But wherever possible, are leveraging best practices, and chaos is a clear place where we can build from things that work and are being used by other folks as the industry standard for open source metrics.
Yeah, I know it's been really interesting, those OSPO working group meetings, because a lot of the work that you presented has really resonated with a lot of the other folks in those OSPO meetings. So that's been really interesting to see some of the similarities. But you also mentioned that the government engagement in open source differs a bit to the corporate environments. Can you talk more about what you've seen and some of those differences that you've seen in other parts of your career at other companies and other organizations?
Yeah. So it is important to say that we're still very early in the journey of doing open source program offices at the federal level. And I'm speaking on my own personal sort of perspective on this. There are lots of other agencies that have been doing open source for a long time. And one of the most interesting pieces, I think, that I've learned is that coming from the private sector, when I worked in previous OSPOs, there was one IT department and there was one acquisitions and M&A department and there was one security team. And so it was really easy to have everyone assume that there was just one community and one organization that you were stewarding. And instead, inside the government, we are federated, right? Even within CMS, there are dozens of groups that all do and have their own engineering teams and their own contractors. And then that's within the context of HHS, which has dozens of organizations like CMS. And then there are dozens of agencies across the federal government. So just the complexity alone is just very different than what I've seen in the private sector. There are also specific metrics that are more prevalent in the private sector to be tracked that maybe will be more important as we go forward in our open source journey, but to start with are less of an emphasis. Those include things like new contributors. For us, a lot of the open source work that is done and a lot of the open engineering work that is done generally in the government, at least in our part of the government, is done a lot by contractors. So when we talk about some of these tier two and tier three projects, a lot of those are government led and or work for hire. So you sort of know who your cast of characters is going to be on the stage, and new people showing up typically shows that you're expanding a contract or that someone else is hired within the agency. The inbound contributions are lower, generally speaking, depending on the project. There are also fantastic examples of sort of those tier four level projects like the Justice 40 Initiative and the US Web Design System and some other really great open source community projects that are happening. But emphasis on new contributors is less so right now, at least within the ecosystem that we're developing in. And another piece of it too, and I don't want to say that this is a difference entirely, but it is something to think about, is that in a private sector context, the more information that you have to steward, the more potential costs that you have. So there's a big emphasis on archival and not releasing things that you are not going to steward. Whereas in the government, and this is unique, this is the people's code, and we have a fiduciary responsibility to provide that. Even just our notes that we keep, we have to have records retention policies and whatnot. So there's this sort of special difference that I think is really cool, where we're serving as sort of like an, not in the GitHub sense of archiving, but in like the National Archives sense of archiving, where we're sort of keeping a record of the history of source code development. And that's a cool thing to think about, is where you can be part of the history of software. So of course, you don't want to see just the prevalence of vaporware and dependency sprawl and repository sprawl. You know, nobody likes to see code just out in the world for code's sake in most contexts. But here, when you make clear expectations and you say, hey, this is a one-time release, there's not an expectation that this is going to be maintained. The cost of that, both from a, I'm looking for something to contribute standpoint, as well as a, we're trying to keep track of metrics for this thing. Both of those things can sort of be met with shared expectations so that we're not putting too much burden on users or on the government to serve that information so that people can have access to it.
It is kind of note that work that your group contributes back to the OSPO working group inside of Chaos is you're doing things that all these other OSPOs in the corporate sector, like you mentioned, find interesting. What does success look like a year from now for the work that you're doing? Kind of a big ship here, right?
Yeah. And as the digital service member, my existence here is time boxed. We are Schedule A employees in the digital services CMS, which means that we have a 4-year tour of duty. So right as soon as you get here, the difference, a lot of people think, oh, government is just this very slow moving, long moving, glacial pace. But in reality, in my heart, clock is ticking. I know that my time is limited. And if I want to make an impact and help people as best as I can, this next year is really the prime time to do that. So I'm not big on New Year's resolutions, but when I turned on to January 1 this year, there was one word that I had in mind, and it was execute. And Lucinda Wade, who couldn't join us today, she was on our team for the first year and has since joined as the CIO, CFO of the Department of Transportation. We wish her the best of luck, but we spent a lot of time together thinking through this strategy with Ayat and others on the team. And we knew that we were making some big plans. And now we're in the point where we have US Digital Core Fellows, we have Coding It Forward Fellows coming. We're looking into other programs to help develop our early career talent pipeline, like Code in Schools and Urban Alliance. And these programs help us to grow. So success for me is growing the OSPO is what I think about and delivering on the plans that we have. Isaac and Natalia's entrance into the program has been transformative. We've shipped our metrics website. We've shipped Deduplifier. We've shipped and helped to outbound a number of other repositories that have been stewarded and built at other parts of the agency. So the more folks that we have in our community and we're gathering, the better we can deliver and help to support the work that's being done in open source here. So by this time next year, I'm hoping that we'll continue to onboard new Digital Core Fellows. We'll successfully run another summer internship program. We will outbound some more repositories at the same sort of pace that we have been, and that we will be able to share our guides and our templates so that other people can use this work as a model so that we can see it proliferate and support other agencies who want to also be standing up open source programs and program offices at the federal level. And I think that each of our teammates probably has a certain idea for what they want for success too, and I'll pass it off to them.
Well, in terms of success, really just in sort of propagating our maturity models and just sort of open source standards throughout the government, just sort of demonstrating value to our stakeholders and just sort of growing our capacity to handle that. We want to get to a place where we can have sort of a community building efforts and long-term growing the OSPO and continuing our efforts, just including more people in it and doing more.
I think for me, I'm very excited to be sharing our work since we've been building a lot of the foundational practices of the OSPO. I guess in the federal government right now, there's not only been encouragement with shifting to or encouraging projects to be open source, but there's also other initiatives such as open data initiatives where you want to share data open source. So I'm super excited to be helping out with that effort through our outbounding checklists and creating those guidelines and policies. So we can also encourage other teams to start adopting those types of best open practices into their software and data sets. And we will be speaking the Linux Foundation Open Source Summit North America Conference and IMPICON to talk more about our maturity model framework, the metrics website we've been building, and the repo scaffolder tool. So really cool to be able to share that work and to go alongside that.
Yeah, and I think what success looks like in a year with the work that I'm doing with Remy, it's making sure that the source code stewardship is meeting its goals. We know where all the repos are. We know who the communities are working in them, and we sort of understand their maturity and content, and pushing out, supporting the team in attending these conferences, designing posters and various other types of materials that can help people understand open source, and being good stewards of open source, I think, at CMS is another one collectively. That would be how we're thinking about success for the next year.
Before we move into the value adds, is there anything that we should have talked about that you'd like to mention that we forgot to talk about? Is there anything else you want to add?
One thing it might be nice to do is get Nadia's name right. I think we're going to talk about her. Nadia Labeling is a shout out to Nadia Eggball, now Nadia Asparova. Apologies if I'm not pronouncing it exactly right, Nadia. She wrote the original Rosen Bridges paper for the Ford Foundation in the mid-2010s, and then followed that up with Working in Public, which is an excellent sort of treatise, the state of open source across the literature that's been published in the last 30 or so years. We actually had Natalia start a book club within our team. So we did a book club on Rosen Bridges, and we're doing a book club on Working in Public. Nadia is a huge inspiration, not just for our team, but for the entire community. So we thought it would be a really cool thing to do to take the theory of Nadia's work and put it into practice and come up with some labels that we can put onto repositories based on some metrics. And a cool story that goes with that is that we actually presented this at the Chaos Metrics Working Group session. And it turned out that Justin from the Microsoft OSPO actually had been doing the same thing. And so he has an example of some repository metrics work that was done where they were developing algorithms to define what the projects are. And so we've been collaborating and meeting with Justin on the side, and we're going to be co-presenting with him at a titled Repository Cohorts is the title of the session at the Linux Foundation Open Source Summit coming up in May. So great story of sort of, hey, we have an idea, it's based on this literature, and it turns out that other OSPOs have had that same idea and they have some running code, and we all work together to create prototypes and examples in the same working group to help move the literature forward.
That's fabulous. I'm so happy to hear that you've been working with Justin and the folks at Microsoft to collaborate on this. For people who might be interested, we had Justin and a couple of others from Microsoft on a podcast. So that's episode 77, where they talked a little bit about some of this work and related stuff that they've done. So I will link to that in the show notes as well. So I would encourage you to listen to that if you're interested. So to wrap up the podcast, the last thing we like to do is to talk about a value add. So these can be fun things. It can be work-related, not work-related, just something that brought you joy, value, or meaning to your life recently. So I will start. For me, I live in the UK. It's been very cold and very rainy here over the past couple of weeks. So I've been very happy for Beat Saber. So I do virtual reality indoor workouts in my office right behind me by playing Beat Saber at a very fast pace so that I get a little bit of a workout in. So I've been happy for my little lightsabers and squares lately. Sean, why don't you go next?
My value add for this week is the HBO Max television program, True Detective Season 4 with Jodie Foster. It twists and turns. Fantastic, wonderful, weird, disturbing. There you go. And I'll pass it to Remy.
All right. I'm going to be a nerd and talk about more work stuff. Sorry about that. But I just returned recently from an event called the Bravo Hackathon, which was a week-long hackathon that was sponsored by senior DoD leaders to provide technical and cultural innovation environments that enable government industry to test and validate bold ideas on real DoD data. It was not the kind of hackathon that I was used to. There was an air-gapped network. There was a secret and an unclassified layer of the hackathon. We got to work with real-world data and do some interesting stuff. The Bravo Hackathon is named after Project Bravo, which was a series of joint Army-Navy target exercises that were initiated by this fellow named Billy Mitchell, who was sort of talking about the aeronautical era that was coming. And it was a data-driven exercise to prove that air power was the future. And Billy Mitchell was a bit of a notorious figure in the history. You can read more about it. It's well documented. But in the end, there were 77 use cases that were brought to the hackathon of over 650 people. And there were 14 prizes that were given out at the end. They included things like best use of data science, best use of AI, best use of ML, best use of hardware, some of the classic sort of categories. One of them was the Billy Mitchell, most disagreeable and most likely to result in a court martial award. And I thought that was a really funny story. And when they explained it,
you win?
We actually did. We took home the Billy Mitchell Award. I was on a team with members of the Space Force and the Air National Guard. So big shout out to the 65th CYS out of Vandenberg Space Force Base in Vandenberg, California. Bahi and Mark and Scott and Armando and Jessica, thank you all for contributing. We built out a DevSecOps pipeline in GitLab. So it was checking things like OpenSSF scorecard and repo linter and vulnerabilities. And we actually ran it on some of the other projects that were inside of the hackathon and found some potential hits. And I think that's sort of when the judges raised their eyebrows and looked at each other, and that might have had a bit of an impact. So we were really excited to pitch this use case as part of the beginning of the hackathon. Our team has been supporting the Open Source Software Security Initiative, which is out of the Office of the National Cyber Director at the White House. And they have 13 different agencies that work together in sort of the wake of the Log4j vulnerabilities that came out in the late 2020, early 2021. There was a task force that was raised around this. So the White House recently published an RFI that was announced at DEF CON last year. And the public comments for that have been open. They closed in November, I believe. So the folks at the agencies are going through and responding to that work now. But going to the Bravo hackathon, we pitched open source supply chain security because we know that this is a critical piece of support that open source program offices and also developers all over the country and all over the world, we all depend on the open source software stack. So if we could pitch this as a project at a hackathon to help get folks on the defense side and other parts of the agencies involved in securing the supply chain, that was the pitch. I was not expecting to win anything. I was just happy to have some running code, and I was happy to work with folks doing real world work. But it's nice to get that little bit of extra validation too. So shout out Billy Mitchell, shout out the 65th CYS, big shout out to Stuart and Rev and the other folks in the CDAO office. Thank you for hosting us.
And those are the folks from Space Force.
That was on our team, yes.
Because I want to go back to Space Force. You should have led with Space Force.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Awesome, I have to say.
Yeah, we're proud. GitLab.com/BravoOSS. It's a hackathon repo, so it's a little rougher on the edges. But we're working on taking some of that proof of concept work and building it back into our metrics work that we're doing. We really want to show people that this work of securing the supply chain using open source tools doesn't have to be very complicated or difficult. We know that not every team or agency in the federal government can afford to hire talented folks like Aya and Natalia and Isaac. So, you know, making sure that we build things that are repeatable and reusable so we can reduce work and reduce costs and reduce duplicate effort is a big part of why we do this, and everybody can contribute to it, even the Space Force, especially the Space Force.
So my value add is I moved to San Francisco around 8 months ago, and I finally got around to visiting my local library, and I enrolled and got a library card. So I'm super happy about that. It's going to fuel my reading era that I've currently been in. So yeah, super excited to start visiting my local branch and also exploring the 25 plus branches here in San Francisco.
My value add, I recently went to Japan in the fall for a friend's wedding and really wanted to sink into a very good book, and had this book called Demon Copperhead on my list of books to read for a little while by Barbara Kingsolver, who also wrote The Poisonwood Bible and various other books. I read it on the flight and it was really just incredible. I was amazed by the way that she was writing from the perspective of a young boy who lives in Appalachia and is experiencing the changes in his town, and really does a great job of describing the faults in the social work system and the gaps that people sort of fall through. And I thought it was a beautiful work of fiction, but also based in reality and have a lot of policy implications. So that was my value add, and I'll pass it to Isaac.
My value add is I've been enjoying the weather here lately. It's been significantly warmer and been able to work outside more often and do that sort of thing. I also painted one of the rooms in my house recently, so things have been exciting.
Yeah, plus one to getting outside. I think there's a lot to be said for fresh air and natural light when it comes to just feeling better. I always feel better if I can get outside at least for a walk or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you all so much for joining us today. This was a really interesting podcast. So we hope all of you, our listeners, enjoyed this episode. So until next time, your chaos community.